Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 39, The Renaissance, A Chronological Overview. This is Part 4 of the Renaissance. Now, as the note in this group of lectures indicates, you should have a look at the PDF of the Renaissance timeline that's included with this conference. So if you haven't already, put it on your screen, which you can do without leaving this lecture. Or if you haven't printed it, if you prefer to do that, let me pause. You can pause the lecture. Go ahead, do that, and then come back and listen to the rest when you're ready. But please, don't take too long or I will forget everything that I want to tell you. Okay, here comes the pause. Wow, what took you so long? Okay, let me see if I can recollect what I want to talk about. Oh yeah, the overview of the Renaissance, of course. Let's look at the PDF. And as you will see, there are a lot of names here, a lot of dates, and I only want to give an overview. Don't worry, we're not going to be talking about all of these people, but once again, the context in history is so important, and the lines between them, although the grid that the timeline has automatically created here really doesn't mean a whole lot, but I just want to point out some aspects of the timeline itself. Look to the left, and you'll see, written vertically, Renaissance artists with a kind of grayish background extending all the way to the right. Below that, society and change, and that's a white background. And then below that, events, also gray. So these are often things going on at the same time, but I've just arbitrarily separated them out so we could focus on the artists in particular, but also see the many mitigating factors, accentuating factors, or whatever that are going on at the same time. So we are going to look in particular at Giotto, and we can see that he stands outside the densest concentration of artists and events that I have laid out. Not that there was nobody in between Giotto and the others, but Giotto is like the grandfather of the Renaissance. He stands there very much at its beginning and could not fully realize what masters would realize later, but nonetheless, as we'll hear in his life, quite an exceptional, remarkable figure. And then I have, sort of at the dawn of the Renaissance, Brunelleschi, who is not taught so widely in Waldorf schools as are the three greats, Leonardo, Michelangelo, and Raphael. But I want to put in a good word for him, like Eleanor of Aquitaine. He played a very important and all too often underrated role in bringing the Renaissance about. And his rival and colleague, Ghiberti, who follows hard on his heels and outlives him, no less important there, a very, essential figure in Renaissance life. And then we see some of the early Renaissance artists, Fra Angelico, Fra Filippo Lippi, so two monks who are also artists. Mantegna, we'll see the contribution that he had to make. Verrocchio, and then we also see right after, or right under Verrocchio, 1435, De Pictura by Alberti, which is the first written formulation of the laws of perspective. So that's about 21 years after their discovery, before it was written down and codified. And you see, this is still a quality of this time, that not everything got written down right away. A lot of things were passed on orally. A lot of things were kept top secret as well. And he who had the understanding of perspective was now going to be a very important artist, one who'd get more commissions than someone who did not. So it wasn't publicly bandied about very quickly. Botticelli, 1445 to 1510, a seminal figure, one who is central in opening up the classical world as appropriate matter for painters to depict once again. Perugino, Ghirlandaio, Leonardo da Vinci. So here we have the first of this great triad, followed by Michelangelo and Raphael. So these are the figures I'm going to be speaking about, some given short shrift, others much more time and focus. But along with them, we could not imagine the Renaissance occurring without these great artists, nor could it have occurred without, here we go, the Gabrielic forces, one great family, the Famiglia de' Medici. And I will be looking at two of the great de' Medicis, Cosimo, who really starts the family off to its greatest strength. So he's already back there in the 14th century. And then we will be looking at Lorenzo the Magnificent, who's right in the middle of the 15th century and a powerful force as a patron of the arts in particular. But we'll also see through the Medici family, there are others as well, playing an important role in the development of Florence in particular. They will allow us to open a window into the social, political, economic factors that were like an undercurrent making the Renaissance possible. We'll also be looking at an earlier figure, Prince Henry the Navigator, though we'll take him up more in geography, and Johannes Gutenberg deserves a mention here, because we see right under Joan of Arc, in the lifespan of Joan of Arc, the printing press invented, which has its effect on the Renaissance, to be sure, an even greater effect on the Reformation, which I suggest you hold off teaching that until grade 8, but if you are going to take that up, then look down to 1454, printing of indulgences. It was the printing of these indulgences that made it possible for the printing press to be further developed. But they were to have an unforeseen effect as well. And Bartolomeo di Pacioli, why do I mention him? Who in the world is he? He is well worth the study by Waldorf students. We'll be talking more about him. Pope Leo X, mentioned mainly because he's also a Medici. They made their way into every aspect of European power. Kings, queens, dukes, duchesses, and even cardinals and popes. And then 1494, double entry bookkeeping. Here again, this is when it was first published, but it had been in operation for quite some time, and it is no less a part of the Renaissance than the discovery of perspective and oil paints. And then the fall of Constantinople. There'll be other political events mentioned as well in a rapidly changing world that characterized the Renaissance. So this just sort of gives us the lineaments of the time in which we are going to be living with our seventh graders. And you can see that if we leave Giotto out for a moment, we're talking about 1377 to the death of Michelangelo, 1520, the death of Raphael. Quite remarkable that we are dealing with such a short period of time, you know, 150 years or so, very much like Athens. And certainly, when Brunelleschi began working, he was still working in a Florence that was very medieval in many ways. And by the time Michelangelo and Raphael died, the whole structure that underlay the Renaissance was crumbling very, very quickly. Michelangelo's final statuary, the Bound Slaves, and his final great painterly creation, The Last Judgment, show a very dark look at what was happening in the world at that time. So we'll see the birth, and we'll see something of the last years, even to a certain degree, the death, in this very narrowly prescribed period of time, about 150 years. Once again, I urge you, you know, don't try to expand back too far, forward too far. If your time is limited, you can, as many teachers do, simply teach Leonardo, Michelangelo, and Raphael, talking about their lives, talking about the individuals with whom they interacted, their patrons, and so on. That in and of itself will already give you 75%, 80% of what the Renaissance is all about. But I do want to point out the importance of individuals like Brunelleschi and Pacioli, who are not mentioned that much, and who I think can also give certain children, perhaps, a doorway into the Renaissance that they might not otherwise have. All right, now we'll start to look at biographies and little thumbnail sketches of political events and social events that at times swirled around the great artistic creations of the Renaissance.